Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on this Monday edition, a little bit of information about the Oscars. Not too much. We're not going to overwhelm you, but there's a few interesting stories about that. And, of course, it got somewhat political, as you might expect. Also, an update on that horrible crash from Mardi Gras over the weekend. Maybe you heard some about that. We've got some details. And a few other stories as well to talk about on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. You're on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, this Monday edition. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. We're starting out the week with a little bit of fog and some light precipitation. It feels like Scotland out there.
Yeah, it does. I've been hearing a lot about Scotland lately, actually, for some reason. But yeah, it makes me want to go there.
Yeah, I like it. I like it for a while, but then I like it to get warmer. We're in that crazy weather pattern like we've been talking about. It's going to be 70 today. And then Tuesday is going to be 80. And then it's down to, I don't know, 50 again. So we just keep riding that roller coaster up and down. And I think it's that way in some places here in the U.S. too as well. One of the big things over the weekend, of course, was the Oscars. The Oscars last night, apparently they had this big mess up. That's the headline. Of all the things going on in the world, the Oscar mess up. But I thought we'd mention it in passing. They say in the most shocking mix-up in Oscars history, Moonlight won Best Picture at the Academy Awards, which is a pretty rough film from what I understand. But only after presenter Faye Dunaway announced La La Land as the winner, setting off mass confusion inside the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles. You can imagine, you think you won, and they're like, oh, sorry about that. I want to tell you what happened, co-presenter Warren Beatty explained after the mistake was revealed. I opened the envelope and it said Emma Stone, La La Land. That's why I took such a long look at Faye and at you. I wasn't trying to be funny. I said, well, and then Jimmy Kimmel, who was the host, said, well, I don't know what happened. I blame myself for this. Let's remember it's just an awards show. That's a great point with all the political commentary. Let's remember this is just an award show. He says, I mean, we hate to see people disappointed, but the good news is we got to see some extra speeches because I think the La La Land people went up there and actually gave a speech, if I'm reading this correctly. And again,
wow.
I wasn't.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. So they gave a speech, thanks, and they're like, oh, sorry about that. You didn't really win. So pretty embarrassing for everybody. And Jimmy Kimmel said, thank you for watching. I'm back tomorrow night at my regular job, a regular show. I promise I'll never come back. So maybe that's good. Maybe that's bad. I don't know. That's happened a couple times recently in award shows. That happened in the Miss America or something, didn't it, where they announced the wrong winner?
Yeah, the Steve Harvey moment. It's happening all over again.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Maybe I just have to wonder sometimes if it's a publicity stunt because it does get your show in the media. Everybody's talking about it.
It probably just goes to show you how close some of those award races are, that they have maybe some last-minute changes that don't get to the presenter in time. And so the person who was wrongly announced was probably just like a hair's breadth from actually winning the whole thing, and then maybe it changed at the last second.
In a related note, this is kind of funny. They always have their in memoriam thing where they show, you know, people that we lost this year. And they showed a still living producer by the name of Jan Chapman. She was up there, like, you know, in memory of Jan Chapman. She's still alive.
Is that some sort of an attack on her career?
I don't know.
Like your career's over? Wow.
Is this a threat of some kind? Yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, is prone to make an error here or there. But typically when you get up to that top level of production, you don't make mistakes like that. So poor Jan Chapman. Apparently she's still okay. So I don't know if she was there, but can you imagine if you were there? And you're like, say, or you were sitting next to her? And you see that, and then you look over, and you're like, wait, what now?
Well, the mistakes were so big this year, it actually completely overshadowed all of the political statements that were there last night. That, I mean, it seemed like a dozen people or so made some sort of statement by either boycotting the entire event or giving standing ovations to people who made any jokes about Mr. Trump or whatever it was. But people are just going to remember the huge mistake. So it almost kind of came back to bite them there.
Another thing that's going on is Mardi Gras, I guess. A lot of people, well, some people enjoy that. But it is definitely a party atmosphere. And I'm sure a lot of times people will go and then they just move on with life. But this was a bad deal over the weekend. Mardi Gras crash, suspect's alcohol level nearly triple the legal limit. You probably saw this story. This guy drove his pickup truck into the crowd. Now, this has happened in several places before. This happened here at Oklahoma State University a while ago. I don't know if there were drugs and alcohol related to that one, but there's been a few. Sometimes it seems intentional. Sometimes it's an accident. They're still kind of sifting through this situation. The driver accused of plowing into a crowd enjoying a Mardi Gras parade in New Orleans had a blood alcohol level nearly three times the legal limit, police said, which is terrible, and you shouldn't be driving. But again, it's a party, and it's kind of hard to control that, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
The New Orleans Police Department issued a statement identifying the man as 25-year-old Nelson Rizzuto. He's being held at the city's jail on charges of first-degree negligent vehicular injury. As bad as it was, he didn't kill anybody. So he wouldn't have a severe of a punishment. Hit-and-run driving and causing serious injury and reckless operation of a vehicle. The accident happened Saturday during one of the busiest nights of Mardi Gras when thousands of people are in the streets of mid-city to watch the elaborate floats and clamor to catch beads and trinkets tossed from riders. Police said Sunday that 28 people were hurt in the accident and 21 of them went to the hospital. An additional seven people at the scene declined medical help. I'm fine. Get away from me. I guess you can decline medical help. At least three victims remained hospitalized overnight with moderate to serious injuries. There were no fatalities, which is pretty amazing. Ages of the victims range from 1 year old to patients in their 50s. So the guy was obviously drunk, plowed into a bunch of people with his pickup, and just kept on going.
Wow. I always wonder with these different things that happen. Obviously, a lot of people are in the street, which is not a normal occurrence. Usually you go through the street and get out of it as fast as you can. But are these roads blocked off like they should be? Are they heavily enough blocked off, like maybe a block width around the entire parade route, so that like the only way you could possibly drive into it is if you did it on purpose?
They had that from the story I saw this morning. They said they were worried about crime in general because crime's just on the rise. And so they were trying to barricade and fortify the routes more to protect people. And this guy with his truck, he drove into some parked vehicles, hit them, and then from there, like, launched into the crowd and then just kept going.
Wow.
And so they were able to pull the guy out. And, of course, he was, out of his mind, clearly. I don't know. There's differing reports, people saying, did he do it on purpose? Did he not? I mean, he was clearly not thinking straight one way or the other. They said he sped up. Like, he hit people and he just kept hitting the gas. So I don't know if you're in that state, if you know what's going on, if you would, realize, I need to stop. But he didn't. He hit the gas pedal for some reason. That's what they say anyway, the witnesses. And they're still sorting through the details. The thing is, he could actually bond out. He could get out. They said he'd have to wear an ankle monitor, but he could leave. I mean, he'd be like, all right, well, see you guys.
Wow.
And he can't drive, of course. But so if he had killed some people, it'd be more serious. But it could have been really bad, a lot worse.
Right. Well, he did cause serious injury. So I'm not really sure if any of those people's lives are in danger necessarily. But the guy still finds a way through and then just keeps on speeding up after he hits people.
That happened here in Oklahoma at OSU. They had a college parade, I believe it was.
I remember that, yeah.
And the lady, same sort of thing. I think she actually killed a few people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember. I don't know if she was on drugs or not, but they said there was some mental problems, obviously. And you hear updates about that every once in a while. But it's a tragic thing, Even there's a victim or a person that got hit that was only a year old. It's amazing to think of the different, Mardi Gras and then Katrina, the two things in that area where it was just absolutely obliterated, and then people get back to their parties pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the year that Katrina happened, they still did Mardi Gras that year. it was lower scale because of all the devastation, but they still wanted to have the party. Mm-hmm. Some people would say, well, you know, what's the difference? But, yeah, you have to look at lifestyle. There might be some issues there to think about.
Yeah, so. Anyone, no matter what your beliefs are, it would make sense to look at what could have caused such destruction like that.
Yeah. So, interesting situation down there. Here's something we haven't heard from this guy for a while. Iran's Ahmadinejad writes open letter to President Trump. So he's putting the quill to the parchment, as it were.
We've been having a lot of people write open letters to him.
Who's writing closed letters these days? You don't hear a lot about the closed letters.
I don't think anyone would write a letter unless a lot of people could read it anymore. That's kind of the trend. People just don't write letters now.
No, they want to get their message out there. And this fella's, of course, you know, he's, I would say, a poor leader. Ahmadinejad, to say the least.
Isn't he up for possibly being reelected, I thought?
I don't know.
There's a chance he could go back into office.
I've heard that. I mean, he is floating around doing something. Iran's ex-president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad published Sunday an open letter to President Trump, welcoming his criticism of the U.S. political system, but taking issue with the visa ban and attitude to women. Come on now, Ahmadinejad. He's concerned about the women's rights. I don't think they're that concerned about it.
Yeah, it seems like he might not be the best person to make a statement like that. But even with the immigration issue, I think it's pretty clear Mr. Trump doesn't hate the people of Iran. He's just worried about mostly the regime and possibly who the regime could send over. A lot of the people there are oppressed and they want out. But sadly, because of the people who could come with them, that could be an issue. And also, women are truly second-class citizens in those societies, and so it doesn't really make much sense for him to be upset at, I guess, comments. I don't think Mr. Trump has made any actions necessarily that would hurt women too much.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what's Iran's what's their immigration policy? Do they have open borders?
I would guess they would have either big walls or people to shoot you down if you tried to come in illegally.
It's just amazing when some of these nations leaders or former leaders attack the U.S. because it's like, what are you doing? I mean, it's not like you're welcoming in all sorts of people. So, but they're quick to criticize.
It also makes you wonder why the people protesting here are not saying anything about those other nations that we have put the immigration ban upon. Yeah. They are clearly at fault, and they don't hold themselves to the same standard as apparently we must be held to.
And I see this when I see like other leaders of rogue nations or former leaders come out and say these things. I always think, well, they're just taking their cue from the U.S. media. They're just looking at it and saying, oh, okay, I can attack them on these things because that's the popular thing to do. So really, in this sense, what he's saying isn't any different than what your A-list Hollywood people say. They're in agreement on that, at least. And so that's why I think it's always dangerous, like when the media or the celebrities, they focus in on some of these issues and aren't really giving both sides of the story, and they're very opinionated, and they're just weakening us as a nation, the U.S. And then you have these rogue leaders or former leaders come in and say, oh, yes, we don't agree with that either. And I think it's just an open door for more division in the U.S.
Isn't that a bit of a problem when you have people as extreme as Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who wasn't even pretending to be a moderate like some of the other leaders that Iran has had recently, but He has openly threatened to wipe a whole nation off the map, mm-hmm. and yet he is in complete agreement with our media and our celebrities. It really does make you understand why a lot of people are starting to say that the media and the celebrities have become the enemy of the American people. They're in complete agreement with these tyrants.
Yeah, and I don't think you can make a lot of movies in Iran, from what I understand.
It seems like a lot of the content would be limited, which in a way might be a good thing, because we have some pretty trashy movies.
Yeah, they say many Iranians, this article says, many Iranians see the new U.S. president as cut from the same cloth as Ahmadinejad, who shocked the establishment with the sudden rise to power in 2005. Yes and no. I mean, nobody comes to power over there without the mullahs agreeing to it. Combining hardline rhetoric and populist economic policies to win a powerful following among Iran's lower classes. Right. Because the lower classes vote in the leaders in Iran.
Didn't they protest in the streets?
They did.
In 2007, I believe it was.
And they were
2009?
Pushed even lower.
Right.
They're not even the lower class. So this is kind of written from the perspective like Iran's got some sort of democracy, which is not accurate.
And it's amazing, too, because obviously Mr. Obama made a very friendly deal with them about their nuclear capabilities, yet we see the same exact media that praised Mr. Obama for that deal attacking Mr. Trump for some, like, vague, grainy ties to Russia that we haven't really proven yet. It's a bit of a double standard, because it would seem like if you had to absolutely pick which one is more extreme and more immediately dangerous, Russia does have more power, yes, but Iran is much more upfront about its the dangers that it poses to everybody else. And yeah, yet the media is fine with being good to them.
They're much pushier, as we know. It says, at times in the long and rambling letter, really, published in English and Farsi on his website. I didn't know he had a website.
Wow.
Probably will never check it out. He appears to find a kindred spirit in Trump. He says, Your Excellency Trump has truthfully described the U.S. political system and electoral structure as corrupt and anti-public, he writes. But much of the letter is spent exhorting Trump to end interventions in the Middle East and to ditch the, quote, arrogance of past U.S. administrations. Ahmadinejad also takes issue with Trump's visa ban on 7 Muslim-majority countries, including Iran. Well, of course, he would like Iran to be able to send whoever they want to the U.S. But I find it interesting, too, that he says he'd like to the U.S. to ditch the arrogance of their past administrations. I thought President Obama was going to change that perception that, you know, arrogance. Apparently, it didn't work in Iran.
Didn't change at all. That just goes to show you, it doesn't really matter how much we do for those nations. They're going to think the same way about us. They're not big fans of America. And yet, we know that a lot of that is America's duty, in a way, to be the world policeman, to make sure that things are not collapsing all over the place, because we have the power, therefore the moral responsibility to do something about it.
Yeah, so interesting. I guess the letter was on his website, but there have been, like, you remember Vladimir Putin wrote one in the New York Times, and they published, and so it's interesting when some of these other leaders start correcting the U.S. And then there's plenty to correct there, but they might want to look at their own nations, yeah, a little bit, too.
It is a bit hard to take correction from those nations.
Right. Iran's pretty busy. They're holding naval war games amid rising tensions with the U.S. I wouldn't say there's rising tensions with the U.S. There's always been tensions with the U.S. This is from Reuters. Iran launched naval drills at the mouth of the Gulf and the Indian Ocean on Sunday, a naval commander said, as tensions with the United States escalated after U.S. President Donald Trump put Tehran on notice. It's not like we were buddies before and having picnics out there. But anyway, they say that it's escalated. Since taking office last month, Trump has pledged to get tough with Iran, warning the Islamic Republic after its ballistic missile test on January 29th that it was playing with fire and all U.S. options were on the table. Iran's annual exercises will be held in the Strait of Hormuz, the Gulf of Oman, the Bab el-Mandeb, and northern parts of the Indian Ocean to train, they say, in the fight against terrorism and piracy. Wink, wink. They're not worried about terrorism because they are terrorists. But here's the critical thing that it says. Millions of barrels of oil are transported daily to Europe, the United States, and Asia through the Bab el-Mandeb and the Strait of Hormuz, waterways that run along the coast of Yemen and Iran. That's the issue, and that's why they're out there. You can control the oil, you control the world.
That doesn't seem like the nation we would most want to control those vital oil sea lanes.
No.
They are pretty anti-America, anti-West, and we depend on a lot of oil coming from those places. So very, very important for us to actually control those sea lanes.
Absolutely, and it's a bigger issue for Europe than it is for us, because we do have our own oil. I suppose we could ramp it up if we had to some extent. Europe's in a tough spot, and they know that. I mean, they're looking at those naval exercises and thinking, what if they took control of that waterway or those waterways? That would potentially cripple Europe.
We definitely hear about that a lot, especially during wintertime. Thankfully for them right now, it's approaching spring, but a lot of the time we'll hear about Russia threatening to cut off their pipeline or Iran being belligerent in the seas nearby, which really sends Europe into a panic, because then some of their people might freeze to death during the winter. If they don't have a way to heat their homes, for example, that's not a very good situation.
Yeah. And what you see is, at least in the past, I don't know if this is changing at all, but in the past administrations here in the U.S., especially the last administration, we were dealing kind of in this fantasy world, and these other nations are dealing with the reality. You know, we had this fantasy of no oil, green energy, all this, which maybe there's a way to do it. I don't know. I wish there was, or but I haven't seen a technology that's been successful. Not yet, anyway. And so while we're kind of fiddling with that and climate control and all this and climate change, these other nations are looking at waterways and controlling oil. At the end of the day, they know what's really important right now, and that's what's important is controlling those waterways, and we don't seem to, at least in the past, we haven't seemed to care about that.
Those other nations are being practical and pragmatic like we should be. Obviously, green energy depends on how much wind is blowing, how much the sun is shining, how much it rains, I guess. But the oil is already there. It's in the ground. It's just a matter of whether or not we take advantage of it. It doesn't depend on the unpredictable weather patterns. And of all people, Americans should be able to see that by now with the different types of weather that have hit the entire country. All of the extremes, you can never really predict what's coming next. But the oil is there. That's what we need to be paying attention to, it would seem like.
Yeah, and they haven't found a good way to harness the other things, not in an efficient way. And there might be some ways. I don't know. You know, if somebody could really come up with something, it would be great. And there's always those conspiracy theories like they know how to do it, but the big oil is keeping it quiet. I have no idea what they're doing. But like you say, the world does run on oil right now, whether people like it or not. That's the way it goes.
And isn't it suspicious how the other nations are just thrilled when we are looking to go green? Mm-hmm. They're saying, well, go ahead. You actually make the first move, and then maybe we'll follow you in enacting the same regulations on ourselves. But then what happens? Do you think China's really going to cut back on their pollution if they are such an industrial powerhouse? No, they just want America to slow down so that China can really take dominance in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty amazing to see that all those things happen. So Iran's busy over there in the Middle East. Here's kind of an interesting note. We don't hear a lot from former President George W. Bush. He's been pretty quiet in general. But he opens up on Trump's war with the media, Russia, and the travel ban. Made a few comments. But there was one that I thought was interesting that I think is a good comment. You know, they asked him about the travel ban, and he said, quote, "I am for an immigration policy that is welcoming and upholds the law." And I think that's a really balanced statement. You absolutely want to be welcoming, but you want to uphold the law too. And I think that's a pretty balanced perspective on it.
And it did always seem like Mr. Bush was as moderate as you could get while still acknowledging reality, especially in the Middle East, because he pronounced a war on terror, and yet he called Islam a religion of peace. So that really should fit in with a lot of the liberal views as well. And if Mr. Bush himself is even saying that despite Islam being a religion of peace, as he called it, that they still need to have immigration bans at times to really strengthen the security of the nation, it would seem like the left should pay attention to that. Mr. Bush really did. I don't think that was right for him to say that Islam was a religion of peace, but that's what he personally believes. And yet he still thinks that a ban at times might be a good idea.
Yeah, really, I think if you look at, say, the radical left, what's their agenda or what are they into? It's really lawlessness. Whatever the law is, they want to do away with it. And because there are immigration laws on the books, but they're being disregarded. And that's the... I think the media is trying to make it out like they're trying to make even harsher and harsher laws, and maybe they would if you want to call them harsher at some point, but I think a lot of cases they're just trying to get back to actually upholding the law that's written,
mm-hmm.
where it's been ignored for the last however long. So anyway, I thought kind of a balanced statement there from President Bush on that one. Here's a recall that you may affect you if you ever use a SodaStream. I know some people that do, have not used it myself personally, but you know, are you familiar with those soda streams?
Very vaguely. Don't know much about it.
It makes like a carbonated liquid water, I guess it would be. And you could put flavors in it, I think.
Right.
But SodaStream is recalling 51,000 bottles due to explosion risk. So anytime you're dealing with carbonation, there's a chance of explosion. The company's 1-liter blue-tinted plastic bottles are being pulled because of a manufacturing defect, according to statements by both SodaStream and the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. The bottles can burst under pressure, posing an injury hazard to the user or bystanders, the company reported. It would be a very memorable party. Someone came over and the bottle blew up.
It almost sounds worth getting. Just because, like, if you put on some sort of body armor and then rigged it up and then just waited to see what might happen.
I'm envisioning like a science experiment,
right?
With the test tube and the.
Be quite the mess to clean up, but it would be spectacular.
You get yourself one of those, and what was the phones that were blowing up? The galaxies, edges, or whatever.
Right.
You get one of those in a galaxy, and you know if the phone burst into flames and the soda stream blew up, it would actually put out the fire. So you'd have two recalled products balancing the force.
That's right. Yeah, imagine, remember how the galaxy was always announced at airports for, like, you make sure you turn this thing off so that it doesn't explode while we're in the air?
Yeah.
That would just be the most humiliating thing if you created that product, and yet everywhere you went, if you ever traveled, you'd be hearing it denounced publicly over every intercom in the entire airport and then on the planes themselves. It would be, thankfully, SodaStream probably doesn't have to deal with that, just being denounced every single day for months.
Yeah, that would be hard if you were that person. People wouldn't know it was you, but you'd feel compelled to explain yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, the announcement would come out in the airport, and you'd look around like, it's not that bad. I think they're overreacting.
It's only happened a couple times.
People are
come
looking
on.
Like, why do you care? Yeah, that would be rough. Yeah, especially that day where you get that report, like, hey, we need you to come down. I want to talk to you for a minute. Go to the boss's office. He's like, you know that product you're making? It turns out it's killing people, so.
Well, that we've talked about before, too. Like, there's few things worse than, like, feeling you're terrible at your own job. Like,
yeah.
What you are basically defining yourself as a professional, as
right.
as a human being almost, because this is what you're doing to bring in money and support yourself.
Right.
And yet, it just goes so poorly for you.
It literally blows up in people's faces. Yeah, so SodaStream's kind of in the same boat here. They say, in addition to the 51,000 bottles distributed in the United States, there's 7,000 bottles sold up in Canada. I'll have to tell Abraham that later for his own safety. The recalled bottles have blue caps and bottoms and a 4/2020 expiration date printed on the warning label. They were sold in major retail stores and online since February 2016 for about $15. So they're pretty recent, I guess in the last year or so. And you might have them in your house. So if you do, you can get more information about obtaining a refund. You can call SodaStream at 866-272-9417, 866-272-9417, or go to SodaStreamVoluntaryRecall.com. Get your money back. If you bought a lot of them, that might be, you might get $100 back, you know?
Yeah, they say any publicity is good publicity, though, because... like right now, I'm thinking about getting some. I would just make sure that very small amount of faulty material would not be the ones that I bought.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, you know, SodaStream, I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but it sounds like a pretty good idea, unless it explodes.
Reverse marketing. Like, hey, we have this huge recall. But
they got their name out there.
Yeah, I got their name out there. If we're talking about it, you've hit the big time. So that's the way I tend to view it anyway. So, of course, this next one's happening here. Man gets extra year behind bars for showing up to prison late.
What?
Because he took a family vacation.
Oh.
You got to show up on time, especially if you got to go to jail.
Sounds like a white-collar prison if he's trusted to turn himself in.
Right. Colorado man, he was sentenced to 6.5 years for stealing powerful painkillers from the hospital where he worked, was given an extra year behind bars after he decided to take a family vacation en route to the prison and showed up late to start his sentence. When Rocky Allen, that doesn't sound like a real name, was sentenced in November 2016, U.S. District Judge Raymond Moore allowed him to self-report to the prison. Allen, who lived in Colorado, asked if he could visit family in Idaho before starting his sentence in Oregon. And the judge said, nay, go to jail. Allen did not listen. He was supposed to show up to the prison on November the 23rd, but didn't arrive on time. On December 2nd, Allen's probation officer called the prison and found out that Allen wasn't there. He then called Allen, who told him he was at his sister's house in Idaho, despite being told he could not visit family. I don't know if he was just hoping that they'd forget about it. Just, you could imagine the dread every day waiting for the phone to ring. Hey, aren't you supposed to be in prison? Well, me?
Well, it sounds like the probation officer waited 9 or 10 whole days before even calling about it. So maybe if he had reported to prison by December 1st, even if that was 8 or 9 days late, at least he would have already been in prison by the time the probation officer called about him the next day. I don't know if he would have still been punished in that case.
Yeah. The man says, I honestly didn't know I couldn't go through Idaho. That's nothing to do with going through Idaho. It's the fact that you were late.
Took a bit of a detour on his way to the prison somehow.
He told the judge that on Thursday when he pled guilty to felony criminal contempt of court. He says, I agree I went against the order of the court and I should be punished for that, but I had no intent to be malicious. Okay.
So he knew what he was doing was wrong and he still did it.
Mm-hmm.
But sounds not, malicious, though.
Right.
I think that's the definition almost.
But not maliciously. And the judge wasn't having it. He said, what you told me is a load of, and then you can guess. That's what the judge said. He said, that is pathetic, a lie, and ridiculous. You are going to sell that nonsense to me? The judge was
very
bad.
Blunt judge.
Yeah. They said what he wanted to do was to have a little vacation before he went to prison. Oh, sorry, that's what the judge said. He said, every single day you stayed out, it was a new violation of the court order. Every single day, there is a brashness. There is a boldness to violating a court order. So, judge, he's not messing around in his courtroom. Allen's a former surgical technologist, repeatedly stole fentanyl from patients at the Swedish Medical Center in Inglewood, Colorado. Wasn't the first time he had stolen drugs from a healthcare facility. He was court-martialed in 2011 while he was in the Navy for doing the same thing at a hospital in Kandahar.
Sounds like he might have been using that for himself.
Might have been, or selling it. Something was going on there. He was fired from various hospitals in three states before the Swedish hospital hired him in late 2015. I always wonder how that works. They look at your record and they're like, oh, you've been fired from your last three jobs, stealing fentanyl. Yeah. Can you start Monday?
We have fentanyl. Maybe he won't steal it this time.
Give him a chance. Four strikes and you're out, right? Or is that three?
Yeah, that's pretty incredible someone would actually hire him into that field. At least if it were a different field where you didn't have fentanyl to steal.
Yeah.
But
it's amazing. Well, that's his expression, right? Three strikes and you're out. This was his fourth offense and he walked. So it's just like baseball. He went to Idaho. I thought I
was four balls.
He's going to serve 7.5 years now at the Federal Correctional Institution in Oregon, if he shows up.
That was a pretty long sentence, 6.5 years at first.
Yeah.
So no wonder he wanted to get a little bit of a vacation if it was that long.
He thought, man, I'm just going to, see what happens. That's a long time. I mean, it's obviously not the rest of your life probably, but, what is he? I forget what he was in his 20s or 30s somewhere. That's a big chunk. Things are going to be different when you get out.
That sounds like a longer sentence than I was expecting, even the original 6.5 year sentence.
Yeah.
Maybe they took into consideration the fact he'd already done it several times before.
Yeah, it could be.
Probably was why.
Probably because, multiple offenses. And sometimes, they give you a sort of a big sentence and then you only serve a year or something like that.
Out on good behavior.
Yeah, but he's not off to a good start.
No.
Yeah.
It might actually make it impossible almost.
You don't want to show up late to jail. That's the thing. So, yeah, that would be a really surreal time leading up to it where in a week I've got to go to jail for 6.5 years. That would just be horrifying.
Yeah, it would. And hopefully you're not in one of the more violent prisons either, because at least that way you could try to make something positive of it, at least read a lot, get really in really good shape, because a lot of there's obviously workout equipment there usually. So,
yeah. Well, hopefully you can kick whatever the problem is and move on with life, but yeah, you don't want to mess with the judges. They're not going to have any of it. Kia David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. Make sure you check that out. And also stop and check out thetrumpet.com today for our latest headlines and analysis pieces. And then there's also a new Just the Best Literature today and a Watch Jerusalem as well. You can get those archives online at kpcg.fm. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the Monday edition. You're listening to 101.3 KPCG. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. Make sure you listen for The Key of David, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and all the programming here on KPCG today. That'll do it for us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.